we've kind of been all over the place in our study on angels. We've talked about, you know, where angels came from. We've talked about what they look like. We've talked about what they do. We've talked about good angels and bad angels. And we've talked about the fallen angels and the fall of Satan and all that. And so as we come to the end of our study on angels, we're going to look at one question that is... it's a mystery, okay? The question of the phrase that we find oftentimes in the Scriptures referring to the angel of the Lord. Okay, what does that refer to, or who does that refer to? When we read that statement, is it a special angel, or exactly what is it? That's what we're going to try to at least give some thought on. I'm not sure that we can give any kind of a 100% definitive, this is what it is. I'll tell you what I think, let you conclude from the passages that we are going to be looking at, what you think, and we may or may not come to the same understanding of that, and that's fine too. But I think that it does bear some looking at to try to get an understanding of this angel of the Lord. Let me share with you a couple of different ideas that people have about the identity of the angel of the Lord. Of course, there are those who feel like and believe that it is referring to a pre-incarnate Son of God. It's Jesus, okay? May or may not be, okay? We'll go through here and see. There are others who feel like that this really is identifying, in a sense, a peculiar angel, peculiar in that this is an angel that is assigned to Jesus, okay? He's a special angel in that he's right there with Jesus, and when you see this angel, then you know he's the representation of the second person of the Trinity or the Godhead. Those are the two most popular ideas. This special angel being a special messenger, so to speak, of Jesus in that regard. And then there are other ideas just simply have to do with, well, he's just an angel, and just the phraseology of it is, you know, he's got a special task that he's performing for God on that particular occasion, which I don't give a whole lot of credit to begin with. Those two that I gave you are the two main prevalent ideas. One is he's the second person in the Trinity or the Godhead, a pre-incarnate Jesus. The other is that he's a special angel that is, you know, close to Jesus, and that's who is representing Jesus in that regard. I am of the opinion that in most of these cases, when it talks about the angel of the Lord, it's referring to the Lord himself. That is the second person of the Godhead. Not necessarily always, but in several cases that we're going to look at, I think that's who it is. But again, I could be wrong about that. I do not think that it is a matter... I was wrong one time before in my life. There was one time when I thought I'd made a mistake, and I didn't. So if... Oh, this is recorded, isn't it? Tom, we need to erase that. the truth is, I don't know for sure. It's one of those things that, you know, I don't know that anybody can definitively say this is what it is. And I don't know of anybody that, in all the things that I've read, I don't know of anybody that has said this is what it is, you know, beyond any kind of a doubt whatsoever. I think there's some reasonable, you know, assumptions we can make from it and so forth. But that's just my feeling about it. And so let's look at some things, and you can come to your conclusion. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 16. The angel of Jehovah, or the angel of the Lord, is what we're looking at, trying to see what can we get from the Scriptures that would give us some kind of an idea of who that angel really is. Genesis 16 is the account of Hagar and Ishmael. And in this account, we look at the statements that are being made concerning this angel. Now, what's happened here is that we know the story. God has made a promise to Abraham, right? Right? Okay, all right. All right. And that promise had to do with, you know, his having heirs and descendants and all those kind of things. But that promise thus far hasn't been fulfilled. Abraham is still without a son. And so Sarah gets this idea that you know, maybe God needs some help to fulfill this promise. And so she says to Abraham, or her husband, you know, take my handmaiden and have a child by him, you know, or by her rather, and that child will be your heir, right? And so that's what happens. You know, Abraham goes, okay, you know, and off he goes. And so they end up having this child by the name of Ishmael. And what happens as a result of Hagar having this child? Do what? Sarah? Well, no, Sarah becomes, she's jealous. You know, she feels threatened now that this child, it was her idea to begin with, okay? But then look at the end of verse 4 here. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Okay, that's Hagar. Then Sarah said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your servant is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. Okay, so Hagar, you know, takes off. She's fleeing. She's not going to allow this to continue to go on. And then look at verse 7. Who shows up? The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. Okay, and he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai, she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, and he goes on to give this prophecy here of what's going to happen. Look at verse 13. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. The name in Hebrew is El Roy, okay, or the God who sees. He looked at Hagar and saw the plight that she was in, and he answered her prayer. Sarai gives him this name. Okay, you are the God who sees. In the King James Version, it says that she asked him the question, and from what I've been able to understand in the Hebrew text, because I am not a Hebrew scholar at all, I don't even know enough Hebrew to be dangerous, okay? But I understand that the text there in the King James is that asked the questions, have I indeed here been permitted to look after him who sees me? Okay, that Sarah is, or Hagar rather, is declaring that what has she done? What has she been able to do? She's been able to see God, okay? At least this physical representation of God. Okay? And so he makes this promise to her that he's going to increase her descendants. If you go over to chapter 17, verses 19 and 20, you see this being stated of the descendants that she's going to have, and so forth. But we see in this encounter where the person who visited her is referred to as who? The angel of the Lord, okay? And the name that Hagar gives to this visitor, this angel of the Lord, is a name that is attributed to God, okay? Which from what we've seen in our study thus far about angels, one of the things that we saw early on is that angels are not to be worshipped, right? We saw a couple of different occasions where there were those who fell down and worshipped the angels, and they said, "Nah, don't do that. You need to worship God alone." Okay, and so in my understanding, in my opinion, it's for whatever it's worth, it would be highly unusual to have an angel that was given a name that would be attributed to God that would not raise some kind of an objection to that name being attributed to that angel if it were not really God. I'm saying it most likely, yes, the pre-incarnate Jesus. Or, it's God. It's, what now? Which part? About the name. See, what we've seen about angels thus far is that there were times when people bowed down to worship angels and they rebuked them. They said, "Don't do that." You say, "You worship God alone." And so in this case, we have, if it's just an angel, if it's Michael or Gabriel or one of the other angels that comes, as we've seen all these different messengers, that Hagar attributed or gave a name to this angel that is a name that is attributing them as being God, that angel most likely would have said, "Wait a minute here," raised an objection. "I'm not God. I don't bear a name of God, you see. I'm just an angel." But we don't see that happening here, you see. So, when you look at the names of God, and how many names does God have? He's got a lot of names, okay? But those names are very specific, you see. And here Hagar is giving this name to this attribute of this person. "I have seen God. This is the God who sees me." You see? So, discussion on that. Tell me what you think. See, here's a challenge to our thinking, is that when we think of Jesus, we generally tend to think of Jesus, and it's almost like we have this block here that's not allowing us to think of Jesus as coming here to the earth before he was born, of Mary, of the Virgin, and laid in a manger, and so forth. But that's not necessarily so. The one question we have to ask is, could Jesus have come before that? What's the answer to that? Absolutely. He can do anything he wants to, okay? Could he have done it? Absolutely. So then I think from there we'd have to kind of go, well, what reason do we have to think that it's not Jesus in these circumstances? circumstances than to say well, for sure that, you know, well, yeah, I think that it is. John? What now? I don't know. If he, you know, God certainly allowed many people and caused many people to die. Which is one of the incidents that many people say that was Jesus that was there. Right. 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 But also we have a statement from Jesus that he says, I came, how does he say it? I came not to bring peace but a sword. You see, that we have to understand both aspects of God, okay? And that's part of what we're talking about, you know, is the Father, Son, and the Spirit, three parts of one God, each having its own purpose or work or what have you in the Godhead, in the Trinity, that we see both parts of that. You know, even within Jesus. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we do find, especially during this particular time in Bible history, we find that God has certainly brought about the deaths of a lot of people, hasn't he? So it's not beyond, you know, our understanding that you know, there were evil people or wicked people and God destroyed them. Now, how he did that, a lot of various ways, in other words, what I'm saying, I don't see it as far-fetched to say that, yes, you know, Jesus wielded a sword for his... Perhaps so, because what was Balaam doing? He was setting about to do an evil work. See? And we see oftentimes, and especially again in the Old Testament, where God has stopped and thwarted the plans of those who were doing evil, and sometimes those folks were put to death. Right, but see, that's part of the issue here is how is he appearing here? You see, we're told it's the angel of the Lord. So you know, we look at all these things we've been talking about an angel. There's this again. I use the phraseology, which I think is a good phrase to use, is that pre-incarnate appearance. In other words, it's before he became flesh, born of a virgin, you know, born under law, and so forth. That's Rick. You got your hand up there, then Pat. Well, right. The word angel means basically a messenger. Okay, that's what the word means. But as we've seen throughout our study, angels appear in a lot of different forms. And we said, basically, we said angels can appear in any form God wants them to. Now, I think that part of the issue here with this whole thing of the pre-incarnate Jesus is, you know, if this was the Lord, if this was Jesus that came on this occasion and some of these others, was he in the flesh form like he was in when he was born of Mary and, you know, and lived here on the earth and so forth? Or on these occasions, did he just appear to be in the form of flesh? Was he literally flesh then, or was he spirit that looked like it? That's one of the big questions that kind of surrounds this whole thing. Again, you know, when we ask the question, could he have done so? It's absolutely no problem for him to do that. We're just not sure. You know, that's my view is that, you know, this is Jesus. He's appearing here as a man, as a person in some of these occasions. But is he the full flesh that he was when he came here, you know, to live and so forth that we read about in the Gospels and so forth? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Could be. Could very well be. Where we're getting ready to go next, right? Right. Well, let's go there and look at it. That's where we're going to go next. Had some kind of a, as you've heard me refer to, this walking in the garden in the cool of the day relationship. What was that? Mm-hmm. Right. And that was the understanding that people had. Could very well have been. Okay. Go ahead and read that, Joe. Guys are jumping ahead of me on my notes here. That's all right. But these are the things that we have to look at and consider. But let's, before we go with that one in any deeper here, go over to 18 and 19 and look at the visit by the three visitors that come to Abraham, and look at some of the things that are stated here. Okay, Genesis 18. Okay, and verses 1 and 2 tells us what? Who was it that appeared? the Lord appeared to Abraham. Okay? When he appeared, who was there? Abraham looked up, verse 2, and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried and, you know, he got to preparing a, you know, meal and so forth. Look in verse 10. Okay? The Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Verse 13. Sarah, you know, hears this. She laughs to herself and so forth. Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Okay? We got verse 16. When the men got up to leave, they looked down toward Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Verse 17. Then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. So we have this question here. Shall I hide from him? Look in verse 22. The men turned away and went toward Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Okay? And then we have this conversation between Abraham and the Lord concerning, you know, the people of Sodom, right? You know, and will you destroy the city, you know, for 50 people? And no, not for 50. Well, you know, how about for 5 less? You know, and they go all the way down and so forth. So, but in that conversation, what do we see happening here? There are three men that come to visit with Abraham. Okay? Two of them leave, and we're told Abraham is there standing talking to the Lord, right? As the narrative continues on, look in chapter 19, verse 1, the two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening. Okay, so we know that, you know, two of them left and they arrived at Sodom. Okay, so who's the third person that's there? Abraham refers to him as the Lord. John? What now? It's angel of Jehovah is the word that's there in most cases, as I understand. Again, that's the Hebrew that is translated the Lord, ain't Jehovah or the Lord. We have a distinction between those, don't we? Well, it could very well be, but I think it's similar to this situation with this visit to Abraham, is that you have apparently two angels, and then you have the angel of the Lord, which seems to be identified as being the Lord himself. Because we see three come, but two leave, and those two are identified clearly as angels that go to Sodom. So in other words, in that same event, we have two different entities here, which I think is similar, if I'm understanding the text you're talking about, if I'm remembering it correctly, is perhaps a similar circumstance there. You have angels that are doing their thing, and then you have the Lord. Right. Yeah. Well, this is all kind of mysterious, isn't it? Well, but understand, and I think, who's got a, you have a King James translation? All right, look at the word Lord there, and how is it written out in your text? Okay, but the actual, is it all, is it lowercase, uppercase, the L is uppercase, the O-R-D is lowercase? See, in the King James translation, that makes a difference. Okay. Right. In which place? Referred to them as, and called them my lords. Which would be, in that case, in the King James translation, the way that they would write that out is that is spelled out with sometimes it's the L is an uppercase, sometimes even a lowercase, but the O-R-D is in lowercase, would refer to a person. In other words, they refer to anyone who is superior to them as their Lord. Okay? Right, right. But then there's the, when it's referring to, when it has the, and I don't remember exactly how this, but if it's a uppercase L-O-R-D, then generally it refers to God. Okay? Right. Right, right, right. See, that's when you're looking at the King James translation, that's how it's written in that King's English. But the other translations, not all of them make that same distinction. So you know that it's kind of, if you're not looking at the King James, then you don't have that particular thing, Judy. And then. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Sure. Right. So we see in this encounter that Abraham has, you know, there seems to be this distinction that is made between these three visitors, two of which are clearly identified as angels, the other one identified as the Lord or the angel of the Lord. And so again, we see there's a difference between the one and the other two that indicates, and in this conversation that Abraham keeps referring to him as the Lord, that leads me to the understanding, belief that this is talking about, again, this is God. Okay? Isn't that? So, you know, we look at this situation, and that's the way that I conclude this. Go over to Genesis 22 in the text that Jerry mentioned to us when Abraham is told to sacrifice his son Isaac. He goes and takes him up on the mountain there, and we see in verse 2, God tells him to take his son. Verses 11 and 12, who is it again? It's the angel of the Lord that stops him, saying, "Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld what? From me." You see? The angel of the Lord is speaking to Abraham, right? And he says, "You have not withheld your only son from me." Okay? Okay? Okay, what version do you have? Okay, all right. You know, it's when you look at that, and then you go to verse 15, the angel of the Lord called again to Abraham and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, I will surely bless you. And he goes on to talk about the promise. So, again, I look at this particular encounter that Abraham has and the way these words are used that indicates to me that we're talking about more than just a messenger angel that God sent to do this, but rather it seems to be the Lord himself. Did he? Right, but they could give that or pass that blessing on. You see, right. Right. Oftentimes, that's exactly true. And here, he swears by who? In chapter 32, Jacob is wrestling with God. Y'all remember that encounter? And look at beginning in verse 22 is where this particular part starts here. And again, how does it describe this person? Verse 24 tells us he says, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. Okay? Verse 28, what does he say here? Jacob, the man who Jacob is wrestling with, okay, Jacob says in verse 26, he's telling him to let me go for it's daybreak. Jacob replied, I will not let you go until you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob answered, the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I did what? I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. Okay? I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The one that Jacob struggled with is described as what? He's described as a man. Right? Clearly. It says, there was a man there that he wrestled with. And yet Jacob identifies him as God. I've seen God face to face. Now, people question this particular text. Say, but wait a minute. I thought the Bible says no one could see God and live, right? Nobody could see God's face and live. Again, this gives, I think, some evidence to the whole idea of the incarnate or the pre-incarnate. This is not God in all of his glory. That's when the Bible talks about not being able to look upon the face of God. That's what it's referring to. Okay, this is a man, God in the form of a man that Jacob is wrestling with. So this is not God in all of his glory. You see, that is the reference that no one can look upon God's face and live, you see. So we need to understand and see that difference here. This is clearly, it's God appearing in the form of a man. Judy? Perhaps so. See, I think that our tendency, again, goes back to something I was talking about a little bit earlier. Our tendency is to think of Jesus as that you know, he came on the scene, even though, you know, yeah, he was, you know, he created everything, but we don't really see Jesus until he comes, you know, born of a virgin, you know, and so forth. So if that were the case, are we to really believe that Jesus, after the world was created, that he just kind of sat there in heaven waiting until, you know, when the time had fully come, and he didn't do anything else? He was just kind of there, and God and the Father and the Spirit were kind of taking care of stuff during the Old Testament time, and then, you know, Jesus comes on the scene. I don't think so. I don't think so. Oh, sure they did. Sure they did. Yeah. Right, yeah. And he was very uninvolved in mankind up until the time that, you know, he came here in the flesh, you know, born of the virgin and so forth. I don't see that scenario as being very likely when you look at God's interaction with man throughout. That I see, you know, without any problem whatsoever, that indeed, you know, this is Jesus that's dealing with mankind directly in that way. Well, and again, John clearly identifies that through him, that is Jesus, the Word, all things were created. He says, in fact, nothing was created that has been created without him. So, right. So yeah, absolutely, that he, you know, this was not something that Jesus came along. The Godhead, the Trinity, the triune God, however you want to phrase it, has always existed. And I don't think it's unreasonable at all to think that Jesus was actually involved in interacting with mankind during that Old Testament period, which is the time that we're looking at here. That is before he became flesh and dwelt amongst us. That he wasn't just kind of sitting up there idle waiting for, you know, when the time had fully come. That's a different manifestation, a different way that he came than what we're seeing here. But he was involved, apparently, with mankind, in relationship with mankind before he came here in that way. Okay. Okay. Well, let's stop right here, and next week we're going to finish this study. So Dale, next week we'll be done, and then Dale will start his study the following week. Because what we're going to do is look at again this kind of identifying. Let's see if we can't nail down and identify this angel of Jehovah, and is there a distinction that's made, as has been talked about here a little bit, between the Father and the Son? This, you know, and so forth. So that's where we're going to go. Let me just tell you, look at some things like Exodus 3, Moses at the burning bush, Balaam, Joshua 5, verses 13 through 15. Look at some things like that, and then we'll be ready to finish up this, all right? Okay, thank you all.